The following podcast is an Embassy Row production.
We're here today to bury the idea that entrepreneurship in New York City is dead.
New York is undeniably the business capital of the world, driven by an entrepreneurial community that is unrivaled anywhere else on the globe. Tokyo, London, Shanghai, all wish they were us.
And a lot of that is because the business talent pool in New York is unreal.
The biggest companies in the world have headquarters here, like Google and Facebook. Massive paydays and perks attract the world's top money-making prospects.
Eventually, those prospects either rise the ranks of those businesses or peel off and start their own companies, or some combination of both.
On top of that, top financing institutions, VC funders, PR specialists, marketing firms, etc., all have deep roots in the city, driving wannabe Zuckerbergs, Cubans, and Corcorans to set up shop in a city that never sleeps.
This entrepreneurial spirit has turned New York into the city of small businesses. Of the thousands of businesses in this city, 98% are small businesses with under 100 employees, and 89% are classified as very small businesses with less than 20 employees.
New York also boasts one of the most diverse small business communities in the country with over 500,000 minority-owned business employees. Try beating that, Madison, Wisconsin.
How do you keep the workplace heart and soul of New York alive in the wake of a pandemic that absolutely killed the workplace? How does a city of offices cope when office life sort of dies?
On this week's episode, is entrepreneurship in NYC dead?
My name is Eitan Levine. I'm a comedian and writer from New York. I've written for the New York Times and Amazon. And one time I was in an elevator with one of the Winklevosses, but I don't know which one.
I'm Drexen Clemens, comedian, writer, commentator on BuzzFeed. And I put that I have an AC unit in my apartment on my Hinge profile.
This is NYC is Dead, a podcast focused on proving how alive this city actually is. Every week we speak with New Yorkers that have direct influence and insight into the industries that this city is famous for, and hear how it's changed in the wake of 2020.
At the end of each episode, we'll get a little closer to answering the question, is NYC dead?
Drexen Clemens.
Eitan Levine.
It's the entrepreneurial episode of New York City is Dead.
Oh my gosh, everybody I know is an entrepreneur. That's so crazy.
If you live in New York, you got to run a little side hustle. But we're not talking about the side hustle today. We're talking about legitimate business. We're talking about people that have to sign papers. Rent space.
And who better to talk about the people who have to sign papers than our good friend Jill Gonzalez?
Jill Gonzalez is our good friend. She's a comedian from the city, but she also works as a finance talking head is how I would describe her. She goes on MSNBC and CNBC and stuff, and she talks about just the business world in general. When we were trying to figure out who to talk to about the entrepreneurship episode, she came to mind because she reports on it. She's not an entrepreneur. She's not an employer. She just reports on business. And we wanted to ask her specifically what it was like, what the business culture community in New York is like, especially after this past year of weirdness in the city. This is our talk with Jill Gonzalez. So Jill, what do you do?
So I am a personal finance contributor. So that means that I work for this financial media company, and then they farm me out to different media networks. So I work with like CNBC and Fox Business, usually on the same day, which makes for a lot of interesting people that I have to talk to.
Is there a big difference?
There used to be a lot more of a difference. Now I do everything from home. Mm-hmm. We're hoping that the studios reopen for like contributors again, because I used to get my hair and makeup done. I would start at Fox. They'd put all this makeup on me. My family wouldn't recognize me. And then I would go to CNBC and they'd scrub it all off. And then my family would recognize me. So that's probably where there was the most difference.
Wait, so Fox, like they wanted you hotter? Is that?
Yes, Fox would make me hotter. I had to stop wearing things with buttons and like zippers there, because they would undo the buttons and zippers. And I want to make it clear that the women would be doing this.
Wow.
The British hair and makeup ladies at Fox would be undoing all the buttons.
So they're like, all right, bruv, listen, you wanna do Fox
News? Fox News? You gotta look like Kayleigh McEnany.
Hey, you wanna be on Fox News? All right.
All right,
you do biscuits and biscuits.
I need a Tommy Lauren type, yeah?
Was that at all like what it was like?
How was it? It was exactly like that.
It was similar. I would like slyly do. They would get distracted by someone much bigger than me. They would.
It's
like
Jason
else.
Statham. Like that.
He's so huge.
Yes, Jason would come in,
button him up,
and they would de-shine his head. And then when they were doing that, I would try to like button one button like very slyly. And they would like look over, they'd be like, oh, no, no. They'd like slap my hands like, that's the fox way.
Wow. They're like nannies. They're like boob nannies. You got the Dow Jones and then you got the Samantha Jones. Historically in New York, would you consider New York pre-pandemic like one of the entrepreneurship capitals of the world? Like how would you kind of sum up New York's entrepreneur scene before the pandemic?
Yeah, so pre-pandemic, a lot of people come to New York for a lot of reasons when they're starting a company. So when it comes to like access to resources, there's some of the most financing accessibility in the country and in the world, honestly. There's a lot of like venture investment and venture capital companies to pitch to. And there's a lot of, you know, that's why people come to do comedy, because you get in the scene, you meet different people and get ahead in terms of being an entrepreneur in the country and in the world. So New York has always been like an end-all be-all for entrepreneurs.
So how has that affected within Corona?
Now there's this sense of, you know, you can do anything from anywhere. So that has really kind of shifted what people are looking for in terms of, you know, where do I get this next level of funding for my business? How do I do this? How do I do that? People are being pitched on Zoom now.
From Ottawa County, Tennessee. So
from everywhere. And they no longer have to, you know, I'm going to quit my job in order to pursue my dream, get out, move to New York. Now it's a lot easier for people to have a side hustle while they're not seeing their boss every day and while they're at home. So I think a lot more people are looking to become entrepreneurs right now. We actually have seen a boom, but do they have to be in New York to do it? Not so much. You have to think, so the last kind of recession we had was in 2008, mm-hmm. and some huge businesses were born out of that. So you have like Slack, Venmo, Airbnb, all of those came out of the last recession. So you have to think that, you know, something big or hopefully a couple big things are coming out of this one too.
What do you think the next big thing is going to be outside of pet stuff?
Outside of pet stuff, outside of skincare stuff, all of these virtual opportunities, I think are going to continue. So if you're in any type of online experiential thing or like new virtual tours, anything that people can kind of keep doing from home, because like business travel, I don't think is going to come back the way it was. You know, big conventions, I don't think we're going to see like we used to see. Most of the reasons why people go to Las Vegas, besides like smoking indoors, we're not going to see as much as we did. So I think all of those things, probably we're going to see a little bit of a difference in, and like different types of travel, cleaning stuff, logistics stuff, you know, all of those industries, I think we're going to see some type of a bump in.
Speaking of industries that kind of blew up during the pandemic, why does everyone hate Skype so much? What did Skype do to people that they had everything to be the biggest virtual industry during the pandemic and Zoom took over?
Yeah, how did Skype fuck this one up?
Yeah, Skype should not have fucked this one up at all.
Follow-up question, is everyone at Zoom like devoutly religious now? Because there's no other way to describe what they've experienced except for the divine providence of God.
I feel like Skype was such a, you know, like we've all known about it forever. And it has this feeling of like what our parents used on their business calls, or what some of us used to see their boyfriend when he was in college and you were in high school because he was older.
You say that as if there was a personal tie in there.
Was there a personal tie in there?
I just, you know, have heard that use case a lot. And
now, yeah, sure.
And now he is 32 and just broke it off with his fiance. So,
wow.
You know, that's just a use case that a lot of us have heard.
Yeah, we've all heard that use case.
We've all heard that. They're all 32, to be honest.
It's
they're
a classic use case.
They're all 32.
Yeah.
So there was a kind of like this older millennial maybe stigma to it. And Zoom already sounds way more Gen Z, which we're all trying to do. And I think it's just easier to use. Like, Skype is owned by Microsoft, who fucks everything up.
What happens if the entrepreneurship doesn't return to me?
Well, first of all, I think the entrepreneurship will return to New York. So right now, New York is not a great place to start a business. Business environment wise, you know, things that have never really been great here, like taxes and, you know, 5-year business survival rates. I mean, that hasn't changed for a long time. Right now, with New York having been shut down for much longer than other cities because of COVID-19, that is one of the reasons that really separates it from other cities. And then, of course, costs. Office space in New York right now is vastly available. Is it that much less expensive than it was pre-COVID? No. So that's,
how is,
you
that
know,
possible,
kind of an
though?
Issue.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same thing with apartments. Right now, New York has the...
Yeah, but apartments dropped 20% and like rent prices dropped 20%.
Yeah.
And now
they're going right back up.
They're going right back up. And rent is one thing, but to be a homeowner in New York, like right now, there's more homes than there have been in like 15 years. The inventory is expansive. And the prices are higher.
But that doesn't really apply to New York, though, because...
It does. It does. It applies to New York and San Francisco in a very weird way, because their inventory is much larger than other cities were pre-COVID. And yet we still see, at least for homes, we still see the prices.
Yeah.
They're
you
the
hear that,
same.
Do you hear that cop outside up. Right now? That's them pulling over a homeowner. too much.
But what I will say is that New York is still like in the top 20 places for its access to resources. So you're still not going to find more venture capital companies. You're still not going to find more like access to financing. So there's still, you know, benefits to being an entrepreneur in New York.
But it seems like a lot of them are in the networking space and not necessarily like the finite, like concrete brick and mortar spaces.
And like the human capital space, you know, a lot of people come here for business school. Even when they did it over Zoom, a lot of people were here. Like they were going to Stern and they were going to Columbia in New York, but over Zoom, which sucks for their parents who paid for that. But they're getting jobs and they're ready to work in these big businesses or, you know, smaller startups for a lot of money. In New York, like they want to stay in New York. And that's what we've seen from a lot of the MBA graduates is typically we see what's called brain drain, which is everyone goes to school and then leaves to go somewhere else. We're still not seeing that in New York. So that gives me some hope that people want to stick around and start their companies here and put down roots business-wise here. The good thing about New York versus, say, a San Francisco where everything is much more tech focused is that a lot of those companies have now either left San Francisco or have big presences in like in Austin, a Utah, Salt Lake City, a lot of them moved to. But the ones in New York pretty much kept their presence in New York. You have a company like Facebook who actually expanded their office space in New York during the pandemic. So that, again, is good for, I would say, New York. And yeah, they're not startups, but a lot of the people who, you know, get entry-level jobs at Facebook do go on to make startups of their own. So that's also good to keep in mind.
What advice would you give to people who are trying to hop into the entrepreneurial space in New York City right now?
I think that right now people can really use this time to their advantage. Again, look at the industries that were affected most by the pandemic. Look at the things that need change the most from the pandemic. Look at everything from retail to dining to accommodations to tourism. You know, that's where we saw the most loss. And now that's where we can see the most gain. So if you are looking to be an entrepreneur, have your own startup. Don't look at what's now congested, you know, the skincare, the self-care, the pet stuff. Look at the bigger picture things that really have the most room to improve and to be shaken up. And that's probably where you'll find the best opportunity. And, you know, now negotiate more than ever. If you do want to have a startup in New York, yeah, some of the costs have not gone down as much as we would think or as much as we would like them to, but negotiate, baby. That's what New York City is all about. So really get in there and say, hey, no one else is buying this space for the next X months or X years. I'll take it off your hands for this. Just get creative and you can still do it all in New York.
Does cryptocurrency affect entrepreneurship in New York at all?
I would say it affects it, again, more than other cities, just because we have a lot of different cryptocurrencies that are based out of New York, thanks to the Winklevoss twins.
The Winklevi.
The Winklevi.
I was in an elevator with one of them, actually.
Which one?
See, this is let me.
Are you sure it wasn't just Armie Hammer?
No, let me just.
Really hungry.
Yeah, he was like, let me fucking eat your rib, and I was like, what? I'm like, what did you say? And he's like, nothing. This is the thing, is that Elite Daily, I used to work at Elite Daily. Our office was in the Winklevoss building, off wherever one of their buildings were, and I had been in the elevator with one of them or both of them at different times, because it was a couple different times where I was in the elevator and I never knew which one I was in with, because I wouldn't have enough time to like examine their faces. So I've either been in the elevator with both Winklevosses or the same Winklevoss a couple of different times.
That's crazy.
Yeah, you know, they're big juice generation drinkers. Has there been a lot of quitting? Because I've read that there's been a lot of like burnout's been the wrong word, but a lot of people have been quitting because they've realized that they just don't want to be doing this, especially like over this past year, you know, where people were not spending money. So they have a little bit of a back up. Is there a lot of quitting happening amongst entrepreneurs? Yeah.
Yeah. I would say a lot of quitting, a lot of not only like switching jobs, but like switching entire careers. I think people had a lot of time to reflect about what they want to do. And now as they see all their friends who maybe aren't in finance or tech or this or that, be able to continue to work from home, they're like, okay, well, I'm going to do that and keep my dog and not return him. So I have seen a lot of quitting in general.
Jill, to wrap it up with you, is entrepreneurship in NYC dead?
Entrepreneurship in NYC is not dead.
Ooh.
It's still expensive. It's still very cutthroat. And it's a little slow right now, but if anything, I would say this is maybe the time to get in and get ahead as an entrepreneur in New York.
Hey, Tom Levine.
Drexton Clemens.
Guess what, man?
What?
We have a sponsor.
We got a sponsor.
We are so excited to announce that today's episode is brought to you by none other than New York staple, B&H, everyone's favorite photo and video store.
You go to B&H. You know, they've been around since 1973. That's the same year the Mets went to the World Series, and it's the year the first cell phone call was made.
You go to B&H. They have grown and expanded from a small photography shop to the place to get all your photo and video equipment.
They have over 400,000 products ranging from lighting, binoculars, telescopes, tripods, printers, drones, audio and video, you name it.
You go to B&H.
You go to B&H.
You go to B&H. It's a true New York success story. And now they ship to 179 countries and counting.
You know, we're probably going to head over there soon and upgrade our podcast equipment, to be honest.
I'm already there. Where are you? B&H is not a chain. B&H is open every day, except Saturdays, of course.
It's closed Shabbos. For all your photo and video needs, there is no better place in New York City than B&H. Also, they have free candy.
I want free candy.
Then go to B&H.
Yeah, go to B&H.
Drexton Clemens.
Eitan Levine.
You know, this week for the entrepreneurship episode, we decided to walk around New York and talk to real New Yorkers about why they thought New York was the entrepreneurship capital of the world, and kind of like what drives New Yorkers to be so business savvy, you know, like what gives them that business hustle.
And let me tell you, they had some really, really fun opinions. And normally we do this at our Central Park show every Saturday at 7:30 on West 100th Street, not plugging or anything like that.
It's not a plug.
But since it rained out this week, we decided to take the show on the road onto the streets of New York City.
So we headed to right outside Broadway Comedy Club. It was just like right near Times Square to talk to a bunch of New Yorkers, and here's what they said.
Take a listen.
Why are New Yorkers so good at business? Why are they so good at the hustle?
Because you have no choice. Like if you, I don't know, it's like taking the subway, right? Like, you know, another one's going to come, but you feel like you're going to be left behind if you don't get on it because everyone else is running for the train. So I feel like it's the same with business. Like, you just got to go. or you just feel like you're walking in slow motion.
There's always, the New York is a money train, and you just gotta hop on.
Gotta hop on the money train. And then you gotta stand clear of those closing doors.
Yeah. You know, this is the mentality that led to the housing crash in 2008. That's really like, you gotta get on the train now.
You gotta get GameStop today.
I'm pretty sure that was like Ohio, Indiana, like the Midwest, but
You know what it is? The housing crisis was a lot of people that talk like New Yorkers who went into the middle of America and were like, hey, you wanna live like a big freaking New Yorker, huh?
Buy a house right now. Yeah.
What if I told you I can give you 8 houses right now with no questions asked?
It's free.
It's free. Yeah. I'm basically giving you free houses.
Yeah. I'm going to give you money. I'll give you $500 for a house.
Think about it right now.
I'm paying you for the house.
It's crazy. I'm going into debt giving you this deal. House. It's crazy.
I'm telling you, this is only for my best friends.
This market cannot fail.
Ironclad,
baby. There's no precedent for this market. If you had a business idea for something that New York needs but doesn't have, what would it be?
I just got a good one. A really good one.
Yeah?
It would be those scooters. We don't have those scooters. Do you know all the e-scooters? Other cities have them? Yes!
Oh, the little birds?
Those. Here's the issue is that people die on those. There's no, like, space in New York.
For those scooters?
In Brooklyn, I kind of get it.
But dying is fun.
Also, those scooters would line the roadway.
Yeah.
Because they brought them down to Atlanta, and it was the worst thing I'd ever seen. Really? Like, I was just like, please get these things away. Wow. And then I ordered one in D.C., and it didn't have a motor part.
I tried to order one in D.C. Yeah, it didn't
have a motor part.
So I'm just paying for a Razor scooter.
I'm paying for a heavier Razor scooter. So it was almost more work for me to move it.
Okay, well, I didn't ask you guys to judge my idea, right? You asked me about my idea, and I gave it to you, and that's it. There was no judgment. You didn't preface this by saying that you were going to shit on my idea.
This is called NYC is Dead and Judgment.
Any other bad answers you want to give, or is that your only bad answer you're planning on giving?
You're lucky I'm doing this shit for you guys. Right?
So scooters,
I'm not wasting
my
time. I've got a train to catch, so let's go.
Why catch a train when you can get an e-scooter, apparently, is what I wanted to know.
I just scooter all the way from here to 172nd.
And then the last question, have you ever been scammed in the city?
No, I have not.
Ooh.
But my friends have been scammed.
Wow. Ooh, tell us a story.
A good friend of mine, we were in the car, and these guys like waved us over, and they were like, "You have your tire has a flat," and I was like, "Do not stop. This is shady AF, right?" And he stopped, and then they were like, "Oh, we can fix your tire for you," blah blah blah, and then of course they didn't let him go without money. Like, he had to give him $100. And I was just like, what is wrong with you? You don't stop when people tell you to stop. That's not how the city works.
No,
that's the old Queen switcheroo.
That's like, right.
The first day that I visited New York City, I walked into Times Square and a monk gave me a bracelet. And I was like, the people of New York are the nicest people in the world. Yeah, no. And then he goes,
and they're monks
money.
In New York.
He goes, give me money. And
these
I was like, oh, money? Okay. And I gave him a dollar bill and he goes, no, 10. Yeah. I was like, you're an aggressive monk.
That's where you learn that monks in New York are capitalists. Yeah. Everywhere else in the world, monks are passive liberals.
Not in New York.
No. But they're monks, but they got rent to do.
Yeah, they got rent to pay.
That's right. Even the monks got rent to pay in New York.
Exactly. The crazy thing about it, though, is I was not pushy yet. Because I hadn't been in New York long enough. So just 3 times of him being like, pay me $10. I was like, all right, here you go. Okay, and so I actually still had that bracelet.
Oh, okay, that's good. You did get scammed big time.
I got scammed.
But you know what? That's like a welcome to New York thing.
Yeah.
Like when you're from New York and you hear other people who are not from New York getting scammed, you're like, that's right. Welcome to my city.
But you know what I didn't do? I didn't buy the CD, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Because that's one everybody falls for.
Exactly.
They're like, free CD. And you're just
like,
okay.
I'll take it.
No, I don't want to listen to your music.
I love supporting live local artists. Tell
like,
me more.
$5. Yeah. CD, $5.
Why are New Yorkers so good at the business hustle?
Lots of coffee.
The New York's economy runs on coffee?
Yeah.
Wow. Just coffee?
Coffee.
You think
and
there's an inherent hustle that comes with being a New Yorker?
Absolutely. 100%. You know, you see these huge buildings and, you know, you really know that you're here and you want to make the best out of every day. You know, you got to fucking hit the ground running. And, you know, this is a city made of people who did big shit and great things. So, you know, you're in the shadow of some of these, you know, people who've done awesome stuff. So you kind of want to mean about
a lot of pressure.
Yeah, pressure. A lot of pressure.
It's like the ghosts of this city are your dad yelling at you to go to law school.
Exactly.
I think New York is the only city where you get to watch people be better than you in front of you.
And kids also. Yeah. A lot of younger people succeeding in ways you'd never imagine.
Exactly.
It's this city.
You have to go to a bar and watch someone be more successful than you.
Yeah.
Like, anywhere else, you get to go home and be the most successful person in your household.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can't even say that about your roommates right now in New York City. Like, I am my least successful roommate.
In every other city, the wealth goes like, hey, the younger people have a little less wealth, and then as they grow older, the older people. In New York, it's completely opposite.
Yeah, yeah.
The entire, no one knows where they stand. The last question is, you ever been scammed?
I have not been scammed, really, that I can think of. No, I've lived here for my whole life.
How have you not been scammed?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Do you know anybody who has been?
Well, one time actually we did we were going to a concert and we bought fake concert tickets outside MSG. So yeah, we were probably like 13 years old.
For who?
I think it was, shamefully say Dave Matthews.
Yeah, yeah. You deserved it.
You deserved everything that was coming to you.
Yeah, no. Here. You didn't get to hear that. Instead of hearing Dave, and I bet you called him Dave.
Dave's
doing 4 days at the Hulu Theater.
You gotta go see Dave live, bro.
Dude,
you listen to the songs, but you haven't heard them.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the thing, is that you listen, but you don't hear them. But you're MSG.
It's a lot of energy in the room. You know.
He sounds like a squeaky door. This is gonna be the last like 15 minutes of this podcast, or this mediocre.
It sounds like Cher.
Why are New Yorkers so good at the business hustle?
Oh, you know, they're just fantastic at hustling. They're so fast down the street.
In general, what?
So, yeah, it's a speed thing. They're just moving quickly. So
you think New Yorkers move at a higher speed than the rest of America?
Yeah, it's because they need to rip someone off, so they have to get there very quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, let's get this. Have you been scammed?
Yeah.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I've done every multi-level marketing scam you can name of. I'll sell you. I got 3 energy drinks I can sell you in my car right now.
That's crazy because we're actually a multi-level marketing company.
I have an
opportunity.
It's not a company. It's an opportunity. And I think you're leaving money on the table or not investing in it. Yeah. I have a box of women's leggings.
Yeah.
That look like regular jeans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That I'm trying to give to you to make, to, and you will make the money.
Yeah.
You will make the money.
And you will make the money.
Here's the thing. You don't even have to sell them. You just have to get 2 friends
to sell them for you. Yeah.
But then they have to get their 2 friends.
Yeah. Yeah. I got creepy enough friends. They could sell some jeggings on the side. Are they used? We could sell them on eBay.
Oh, that's true. Oh, wait. I want to point out, by the way, that used jeggings probably make more money than
unused jeggings.
Unused jeggings.
100%.
Yeah. Oh, but the resale market on jeggings is crazy.
Okay. If you had to invent a New York business idea that New York needs but doesn't have, what would it be?
It would be hot dogs with the hamburger bun on them instead of the hot dog bun.
Wait, what?
Explain.
Like a round hot dog?
A round hot dog. And you cut up the hot dog and you make it a sandwich. So it's a sandwich hot dog.
Wow.
It's a hot dog sandwich.
Wow.
What?
This
is blowing my mind.
That is both, I don't know why, that's disgusting, I'm so intrigued. Hot dog shaped like that, that's pretty great. You should sell that. I feel like you would make a lot of money.
Yeah. With that shirt and that idea.
Listen, yeah.
Hey, you guys wanna have a hot dog but don't wanna like look like you're eating a hot dog? Hot dogs are hamburgers, guys.
There's a lot of shame in eating a hot dog. You know, it's a very on the go thing. Now you have a sandwich.
I will say this also, for those at home, if I had to describe you, I would probably describe you as the guy that probably invented hot dog shaped like hamburgers. You look like that. You look like exactly the
demo. I got the vibe of a guy who's
the plaid shirt.
That's right.
I mean, you look like you're dressed like an improviser.
Drexton Clemens,
Eitan Levine.
On this week's episode, we also spoke to Cindy Ramirez, who created Chill House and Soho. Chill House, so chill. Regular houses, not chill.
Not
chill
so chill.
House, this very chill.
The chillest house. What is cooler than being cool? chill house is what it is. Mm-hmm. So we had a very interesting conversation because she actually opened up her Soho location right before the pandemic. So we got to talk to her about not only the opening process of a business and an entrepreneurship in NYC, but we also got to talk to her about some of the challenges she had to face during the pandemic and how her business had to pivot to meet the needs of people who couldn't physically come into the building.
That's right. Chill House is, of course, an in-person experience. So in the pandemic, she had to figure out a way to address all the changes, the real-world physical changes that Chill House could no longer take advantage of. And she ended up creating, you know, a new line, a new brand within Chill House that did remarkably well. So we spoke to her about that. So here is Cindy Ramirez from Chill House.
Chill House.
I have a theory about city kids, where city kids are some of the most like adapted, like adult human beings you will ever meet in your entire life. And I think because of that, they end up having a lot of like businesses and they end up being like very entrepreneurial from like a very young age. So at what point did you start getting into like business stuff?
Oof, not for a long time. So when I moved here, I actually fell right into the nightlife scene. Actually, I started working for a promoter and I was kind of like his assistant. So I would go to nightclubs and literally collect email addresses from random girls in bathrooms so that I can invite them out. This was a long time ago too. This was like, I feel like it was like the heyday of nightlife in New York. And I feel like there's going to be a resurgence of it soon, which is really fun.
Wait, when was the heyday? When was the heyday?
Yeah, like 2002. So I was going out for like the actual 21 and older clubs I started going out to like when I was like 17, which is kind of crazy. So like 17, it was 2002. And I feel like up until, I don't know, 2006 maybe, I feel like that was like my prime heyday. That's like when I actually really enjoyed it. And of course, it's been around forever, but that was my prime heyday because that was when I was like anywhere from 17 to about 24, 25 when I, around the end of me working in nightlife. So I moved here and I immediately fell into that while also kind of simultaneously acting. And then I obviously went to college. So I went to college at a school called LIM. I studied fashion marketing. I quit maybe 6 months in or I dropped out, not quit. Just basically because I was like so deep into the nightlife scene and I was making some pretty good money. And at the time I was like, well, why am I going to fashion school? And I don't really know if this is what I want to do. Yada, yada, yada. So I was, you know, kind of in this vicious cycle of trying to figure out, what my path was for like most of my 20s. And it really wasn't until, I basically fast forward many, many years later. I was like, okay, this industry is kind of a dead end road for me, not for everyone. I mean, I knew I didn't want to like own and operate a bar or manage a bar or anything like that. So I just knew that I had to pull out of it at some point. And so I ended up interning. So it was kind of this, like, I was a 26-year-old intern. I definitely had to swallow my pride a little bit with that one. Because that's old for an intern a little bit,
26,
right? That's
45
I've definitely had interns that are like 26. So I was definitely like an old bitch as an intern. But I felt like I was already kind of ahead of the game because I knew I was like a New York City kid, you know, I grew up like meeting a lot of people. I was like connecting.
Wait, where were you interning?
In the nightlife space. It was for a company that no longer exists, but it's the one I talk about the most because I learned the most there. I was there for 3 years. It was my only corporate job ever. Mm-hmm. Like that was my first internship that turned into a corporate job. And then from there, I basically never worked for anyone ever again.
Oh, well. What kind of
so
company was
it was this
that?
Very pivotal job for me. It was like a fashion tech startup consultancy. I know that sounds a little weird, but during the heyday of all these startups, you know, like the Birchboxes, the Rent the Runways, when they were all sort of coming up and then all of these newer startups were trying to enter the space, we felt like there was something missing where there needed to be some sort of agency or consultancy that helped these founders sort of fill in the gaps in their business. Mm-hmm. So my founder or the founder at the time, she had a business background, a fashion background, and a tech background. So she spoke all three languages really well. And basically I was just her right hand. I started off as just an intern helping her set up her business. And then I basically, after my like, you know, intern period, I ended up giving myself a brand and business manager title, which allowed me to kind of play in both worlds. So like helping her with proposals and business development and, you know, bringing in revenue into the business. And then on the other side, helping her build out the brand and running events and building her social presence and press in general and all that. So it was really fun. And it allowed me to learn a lot, obviously, about business and of course about technology and the startup world. And that was really fun and exciting. And it was like a whole new world to me and obviously a crash course in entrepreneurship. So fast forward, you know, 3 years after that, when we parted ways, I had a couple of crossroad moments where I, you know, was trying to get jobs. And basically my husband, well, my boyfriend at the time, now my husband, was also opening up bars. So I was also kind of watching him. He was opening up a bar, his first bar, and then he was also running a marketing agency. So I was surrounded by entrepreneurship. And I was like, of course, this was the natural direction versus like entering like a very corporate establishment that I just never grew up being around or wanting to be around.
So then take us from doing the events and everything to kind of what Chill House has become now.
There was a point, I think, around maybe 5 years ago that I just felt a little burnt out from running a blog. I felt like it wasn't what I was destined to do. I missed that like in-person connection of like hosting events or, you know, just like gathering people in a space. I really wanted that for myself. And so there was a lot of like brainstorming as to what I would do if it were mine. And it's like this perfect storm of ideas that kind of came together and then formed Chill House. But it's also very like cosmic and full circle because my mom owns like Medi Spas, or she has owned a couple of Medi Spas throughout her entire career. And I've watched her sort of operate these. And I guess subconsciously, I was always trying to figure out how to modernize them for me. So that's how Chill House kind of came to be. It was like this aha moment of just my husband and I were trying to get massages and we realized we didn't really love our options. And it opened up this big dialogue about how there was just something missing in New York City when it came to relaxation in the spa world. You know, spas before Chill House and even spas now, like, I mean, there are a lot of really cool ones kind of starting to open up, such as like Bath House and places like that. But prior to Chill House, your options were either very luxury, tiptoey, like wind chimes, sort of, you know, that kind of music and very hush hush. And on the other spectrum, it was like you go into a basement, you don't know what you're getting or who you're getting. They're all talking over each other. Those were the two options you had to your disposal in New York City. And I was just like, there's something here. There's something here. And so we opened up Chill House almost 4.5 years ago now, Lower East Side location. And it was great. It was met with open arms. You know, we had three really exciting things that kind of came together that really sort of disrupted the spa world, which was, you know, we had a really amazing cafe alongside a really exciting nail art program and these massages. And so that kind of entering, I say, like the spa world that way, it was very interesting at the time. Like it was thought of as like an innovative business because it was kind of solving a lot of issues in one place versus like, I think at the time there were a lot of single service places opening up. There's like the Heydays, you know, there was a lot of like, just I go here for my one thing, and Chill House was trying to do a few things. So we wanted to be like an all one-stop shop. And eventually we kind of got there with our Soho location. We definitely outgrew the LES location and we ended up closing that one during the pandemic.
So you opened up your Soho location in the middle of the pandemic?
Right before the pandemic.
Really?
November of 2019. Oof.
Oh my gosh. What were some of the challenges you had to deal with like leading into the pandemic, like just getting it off the ground first, but then what changed when the pandemic hit?
Honestly, it was actually really, for the most part, smooth opening. For the most part, of course, it had its challenges, but we were really excited because everything was looking great. Our numbers, we were outperforming our projections, which was not expected. Because our LES location was always sort of like trying to keep up with our projections versus this one was just like outperforming. So that was really, really exciting. We're like, wow, we finally have the model right, you know? And then of course, leading up to the pandemic, I was just in pure denial, I'd say, until I wasn't. And then I was in pure agony because I knew how long it was gonna be to actually recover from this.
Was there a moment?
It really started dawning on me when I felt an immense amount of pressure to close the store because all these other companies were closing their stores. And there was a lot of pressure around, like, you know, like the Glossiers, like a lot of these like VC funded female startups, they were like, we're going to close our shop and we're going to pay our retail employees. Like, we're not going to just kind of kick them to the curb. And I was like, well, we're small. What do we do in this case? Like, how do we play this? Like, I can't afford to keep my team on our payroll when they're not working. It's just a lot of pressure there internally, a lot of like moral sort of turmoil happening inside my head while this was all happening. That was when we started to feel a lot of the pressure of what could we actually do? What could we afford? How can we afford to get through this without really knowing what was going to happen, what kind of government support we would get or anything? There was like zero answers to a million questions. That's how it felt at the time. So we just got really honest with our team. I mean, I sent an email to them saying, hey, listen, guys, like, I'm very sorry. There's nothing I can really do here. Like, we're just going to try to figure out a way to support you in other ways. We can't keep you on payroll if you're not working. We have to shut down according to the state. We'll figure this out. We'll get through this together. And it was just all I could offer in that moment is just compassion. Like, I'm sure that they were scared out of their minds, as were we. And that was really it.
So how did your team respond to you sending that email?
Honestly, for the most part, they were all very understanding. I think everyone realized very quickly that this is just something that was out of everyone's control. There's literally nothing we can do other than just help them and handhold them however they needed to be held. And we did that, and we tried our best to come up with ways that we can continue supporting them. We launched this like gift card initiative where a portion of the sales were going to go directly into a pool so that everyone could collect from the revenue generated from the gift cards. So we did that, and we did like a GoFundMe. You know, I'm sure you know, like, there were a million GoFundMes kind of going around. So we did all the things. I'm kind of like spacing on the different things that we did for them. But as long as you try, I think people are understanding that it's really just something that's out of your control. And like, yes, like, would I love to have been more prepared for something like this so that we can better take care of them? Absolutely, of course. And like, it's like a lesson learned.
Were any of the things that the government tried to do throughout the pandemic helpful to you as an entrepreneur?
They're definitely a little helpful, for sure. I mean, mm-hmm. It didn't help us altogether. We had to come up with creative ways to climb out of this, obviously this debt that we'd accumulated because we were sitting empty for so long. So we ended up launching our Chill Tips, which ended up becoming like such a big part of our business. And that really also was kind of like this COVID product that wasn't supposed to be a COVID product, but mm-hmm. ended up becoming one just because so many nail salons across the country were still closed. And so right off the gate, we launched those products. They're basically nail art press-ons. So okay. we do nail art in our stores. So we just basically took some of our best, more well-known designs and put them on press-ons. And they just did super, super well. So in a way, you just have to get super creative, I think, and which we did. And that was one of the things that really helped us kind of climb out of it.
What was it like when everything started to come back?
It was a little tricky. I think you definitely had to navigate a lot of sensitivities. You had to make sure that you were being super careful and mindful of COVID and respecting people's space and their beliefs and all that. So it was definitely a little tricky to navigate, but overall, I think it was we were really well received in general. Like, everyone was really happy that we were back and that we were operating very safely. And they were just excited to be out of their apartments, I think. So energy is better than ever now in New York City. But I think there was a lot of compassion around businesses, especially businesses that have brick and mortar spaces like Chill House Hospitality, Food and Bev. And there was a lot of support and rally around these industries. So I think we definitely felt that energy and that support during that time, for sure.
And like, how long did that last, you think?
I mean, I think it lasted like a while, but of course, like, as things reopen and people are like, okay, it's time to get back to business, there's definitely like a little less nice, like, our customers are super nice, mm-hmm. but there's like, people aren't as accepting of COVID fees, so we're like, okay, I guess we have to remove that, even though we still feel the bite there, the COVID bite. Right. We'll just have to remove it, right? And I think that's where you're going to start seeing a little bit of pushback from customers, where they're just going to be like, what are you doing? Like, the pandemic's over a little bit. They're going to come in with that mindset a little bit, mm-hmm. and the sort of like full return vibe. And it's like, whoa, 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 guys, we're still kind of getting our bearings here. So I think there just has to be a bit of like a compromise that we all kind of agree on, and that we're just going to continue to be really civil and be happy and mm-hmm. be understanding of each other's, the way each other operates, you as a customer and me as an operator. And that's hopefully where we're going this year. I feel really optimistic about it. I feel like everyone's spirit's super, super high. So just hoping that we can all just continue to be understanding.
Well, what advice would you give people who are trying to hop into the entrepreneurship game in New York City now?
Ooh, well, strike while the iron's hot. I mean, I think you may still be able to get some pretty good deals if you're looking to open up a brick and mortar space. So definitely start looking at your options there, but don't sleep on it. If this is something that you're really passionate about, there probably is still a lot of opportunity to get like a really great space. And we're able to now have outdoor space. So definitely jump on that bandwagon. We don't know how long this like outdoor structures thing is going to be allowed, but if you're able to open up sometime this year or next year, I think it's still going to be to your advantage to get up and running soon. But yeah, the same can go, I think in general, like, I guess from an advice standpoint, just know what you can kind of take advantage of now while there's still so much in flux, because I'm sure there are a lot of perks out there for new entrepreneurs.
I can't believe we're even asking this right now, but is entrepreneurship in NYC dead?
Oh, hell no. Why would it be? It's just getting started. There's just so much opportunity. I mean, it's like literally we're gearing up to have a renaissance in New York City. I know there's just so much romanticizing New York, and of course it has its flaws, and there's no way that I love it every single second of the day, but the immense amount of exodus that happened last year and just the rallying around bringing it back from like the hardcore New Yorkers, like that shit made me so happy. Like I've had multiple teary sessions where I'm just like observing how the city is operating right now and how, like, I mean, just look at Pride alone, right? Look at like the election day, or when Biden and Harris won alone, like that energy, like that's just going to continue. And so if you can find something that like fill a void in New York City right now, as it pertains to keeping up with this energy and making this energy as exciting and as incredible as it could be, and even more, like that's what you need to be doing. Like go after that business, open that business, because I'm telling you, experience is never going to die. Like if there's anything this year has taught us, is that people are dying to get back out there and see things and be with other people. Like in-person connection is never going to die.
I think, you know, if I could open up a business tomorrow, it would be post nightclub aftercare, where you just walk out of the nightclub and then they're like, okay, talk to me. And they're like, I think I love the bartender. They're like, no, you don't. And it's like, you know, where's Linda? It's like, she already went home. She left a while ago. You're fucked up. What's your address? Like literally it's just a bodega and an Uber and a therapist all in one session.
Oh my God.
And then
I think it is called a bodega.
It's literally
a bodega. Bodega guys on the go. It's Uber for bodega guys. We'll have your bodega guy show up as you're leaving a bar.
Boom. And then he'll talk to you. To
be therapists. Yeah.
Exactly.
So therapists have to also be like, they have to be restocking the shelves and counting the cash at the counter. Yes.
Exactly.
And at the end of the day, there's nothing better than having someone look at you and going, my friend.
Hey.
And that's all you are to them.
That's all you need. Yeah. And that's why New York is beautiful. Where else does everyone say, my friend? Exactly.
My friend. So is entrepreneurship in NYC dead? No, not at all.
Businesses may not be moving at the rate they were before the shutdown, but they're coming back, and you can feel it in the spirit of adaptability that New York has shown.
Empty offices and storefronts still dot the streets of New York, but that empty real estate may be the thing that is giving hungry new entrepreneurs the kick that they need to start their next businesses.
And we're seeing lasting effects of this new business reality. Employers had to take it a day at a time with their employees. And in a lot of ways, this has strengthened the bond between the two in a way that we've never seen before. This adversity has forced employers to not only consider the customer, but to take into account their workers' needs as well.
Yes, many businesses that relied on foot traffic or in-store experiences have had to pivot. But now those same stores are using those lifelines as extra revenue streams during the reopening.
Entrepreneurship hasn't died in this city. And those who think it did are probably telling you that from whatever small town they moved back to when things got a little bit rough.
NYC is Dead is a production of Embassy Row. Our executive producers are Julia Cassidy, Eden Sudley, Anna Marie Johnson, and Leslie King. This episode was produced by us, Drexen Clemens and Eitan Levine, aka the Pastrami Boys. This show is edited by Maureen Begas.
You can follow us on Instagram at thisguydrex, at AtonTheGoalie, and at NYCIsDeadPodcast, or email the show at NYCIsDeadPodcast@gmail.com. See you next week.